Sunday, it will be 4 years since the Ayatollah Khomeini issued a death sentence on novelist Salman Rushdie. He considered Rushdie's novel, The Satanic Verses, blasphemous. Rushdie's been living in hiding ever since. Even though Khomeini is dead, Iran says the fatwa, the death sentence, is a religious decree and cannot be revoked. Critic John Leonard has these thoughts.
Salman Rushdie, the blasphemer, wanders the world with a price on his head, or circles it like a communication satellite, beaming down the occasional message to an op-ed page or an awards banquet. The leaders of the great religions certainly aren't listening. From the Archbishop of New York to the Archbishop of Canterbury to the Chief Rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of the British Commonwealth, Rushdie is disdained. Nor, with the single exception last month of Mary Robinson, President of Ireland, have the leaders of the great democracies rallied to his cause. Bush wouldn't even talk to him last spring. Spokes-troll Marlon Fitzwater told reporters, "Rushdie's doing book tours and things that authors do. There's no reason to have any special interest in him." As for our precious media, well, they may wear the First Amendment like a bumper sticker or a prophylactic to every invasion of privacy in the lurid culture, but their behavior here has been shabby. As if free speech were a good idea for such toads in the erotic garden as Andrew Dice Clay or Larry Flint, for Pat Buchanan and Louis Farrakhan and any other pip who squeaks. But let's not go overboard for a left-wing Anglo-Indian troublemaker. Look what happened to his Japanese and Italian translators. So, as if a man's life weren't at stake, Newsweek makes fun of a feud between The New Yorker and Esquire over Philip Weiss's nasty Esquire article telling us that Salman Rushdie is not a nice man. He's really a crybaby. And the reason more people don't say so is because saying so is politically incorrect. It says something about journalism in our country that magazines posture in front of experience instead of engaging it, that they look, in their careerist skepticism, for an angle, a spin, or a take, instead of consulting a moral compass, that they strike attitudes, like matches, in order to admire their own wise guy profiles. According to these wise guys, Salman Rushdie isn't Socrates, or Galileo, or Jan Hus, or Thomas More, not even Spinoza, so don't sweat it. Rushdie has his advocates, from the officers of American Pen writing to the New York Review of Books on February 11th, to authors like Nadine Gordimer, Gunter Grass, Mario Vargas Llosa, Margaret Atwood, Norman Mailer, and Tom Stoppard, who declare their support in a new book called The Rushdie Letters, published here next month by University of Nebraska Press. But maybe we should remind ourselves what's at stake between Rushdie and the assassins. He is himself a child of imperialism, a mongrel self, he says, history's bastard. If the British hadn't colonized India, he'd never have been one of midnight's children, partitioned at least three different ways. He'd never have gone to British schools, nor written in English his Monty Python send-up of religion and myth and post-colonial identity crisis and modernist pastiche. The Satanic Verses is about metamorphosis gone wrong, about our having left home once too often for history or the movies, for fiction or advertising, and lost ourselves in a world without love or roots. Stateless, we spin. No more avatars of Vishnu. No more rising out of ashes like a phoenix, nor resurrecting like a Christ. We are reborn as mutants, devolved into parody and farce. For Salman Rushdie, with a contract out on him, there is no home. He is lost, spiraling in cyberspace, the ultimate hostage to sectarian fevers, communal violence, and bloody geopolitics. This Flying Dutchman astronaut ought to symbolize, for all of us, the dispossessed everywhere, the damned and ghostly 20th century homeless, boat people. If he isn't on our conscience, we don't have one.
John Leonard is media critic for CBS Sunday Morning.